I wanted to take a minute today at the beginning of the podcast and say thank you to our sponsor, Huber Engineered Woods. Huber has actually been a sponsor of the podcast since 2020 when we decided to start this little endeavor. Without our sponsors, this content is probably not something that happens. But I think the best part about having Huber as a partner on this is it's an incredibly authentic alignment. Peter, Steve, and I all use Huber Woods. I've been using Advantech Subfloor for coming on probably 21 years now. I've been using Zip System and Zip System with the insulation on the back, the Zip R, since 2013. It's a system that I believe in. That systems approach where things play well together. They have design parameters that allow you to use their system for what you're working on. It works. Their tech support's there. Their knowledge is there. I've never had an issue with their product, and it's a great thing that they've decided to sponsor the podcast. So thank you, Huber Engineered Woods. I'm Jake Bruton, and welcome to the Unbuild It podcast. Today, I am joined by my co-host, Peter Yost.
Morning.
And Tim Hill of Reisinger Build.
Good morning.
And I thought of... Thanks for joining us today, Tim.
Sure.
And I thought just now when I was walking back into the studio of a Mark Twain quote that I like a lot.
Cool.
That is, it's not what we don't know that gets us in trouble. It's what we know for certain that gets us in. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. I don't think that he spoke exactly the same way I do. And I had thought, oh, we probably don't need to have Tim introduce himself because people know who he is. I don't know if all of our listeners are going to know who you are. So that it's that I know for certain that people know who you are because I know who you are sort of thing. Would you mind introducing yourself, Tim?
Well, sure. I mean, I think I've been on a few podcasts with Matt, and Matt's tried to do a good job explaining how we came together and what our relationship is today. But I've been a home builder in Austin for over 40 years and know the market well, know all the builders that build in our market and in our end of the market. Went to University of Texas, went to work for a volume builder in the early 80s and became a custom builder in the mid 80s.
Volume builder. That's the first time I've heard that phrase.
So it's a production
builder. I know that's, yeah. It seems so polite when you call it volume builder.
Well, production volume. Yeah.
I like that.
It's less insulting than the way I normally view it.
But, anyway, so, then, I guess 11, 12 years ago, Matt and I have known each other for a long time. And when he moved to Austin, he sort of got involved in some of the trade organizations that I've been involved in for a long time. And so we formed a friendship, and then it was a natural progression for us to start working together. And we've been working together ever since. And Matt's passion is home building science and the education and promotion of that across the country.
Yeah.
And therefore I am sort of the R&D end of that formula. And we try to implement all the proper building science products and practices in our home building in the local Austin market relative to our climate zone, relative to the people that we work for, the architects that we build their products. And so that's what I do, as I am the local end of that effort.
Okay.
And, you know, I walked in this morning past a job site trailer large dehumidifier that you guys use. That's
just a package unit outside.
The package unit on the trailer. And I think, well, that's a good place to start with how is high performance building different in Austin or for the Reisinger Build company.
Yeah. So that's Pete leads us directly into what our topic is today. Let's talk about all aspects of high performance building in this market in particular. And obviously it's going to be couched from your guys' perspective, but I think you have a much larger view of the industry than even some of the other folks that work out of this office because of your breadth of experience.
Well, I think Matt and I've had many conversations about what we want to do and then what we actually do as a response to what our market asks us to do. Mm-hmm. And so, the architect community that we generally work with produces high achieving architecture that's complex in nature, vulnerable to elements, vulnerable to, you know, weather and age and use. And therefore, they require special attention to overcome those obstacles with the proper building techniques and products. And that in itself is a unique challenge. I think we've done a really good job of overcoming the gymnastics of structure and
such a
diplomat.
I like that.
That architects present to us. So
we generally call that a pain in the butt, pain in the rear, not the gymnastics.
That's good.
But anyway, so I think we do well. And of course, it's all client driven. We like to say that our business is structured to satisfy clients. The interesting part is the one way we achieve that is we choose the right clients. Mm-hmm. And so if you understand that your clients' interests are aligned with yours, then it's much easier to satisfy those clients and give them homes that perform well and look beautiful, last forever, et cetera.
So Tim, you know, I get to look through buildings through one lens because it's just the building science of enclosures. So how does your company focus on that? And how much do you share that aspect of your work with your clients? Or do they come to you and say, hey, we heard you guys know more building science than the next builder?
Well, quite honestly, that's how we get many of our clients, just because we're known for that. I've said in the past that because of Matt's presence in the country and locally and our reputation, we build under a microscope. Everybody knows sort of what we set in the way of precedent. So we have to be very careful and very verbal about what our expectations are with the architects and the clients. A lot of times architects don't necessarily like when we push back and say, that's not going to perform well. Mm-hmm. Here's a way we need to tweak that design to make it endure and last and perform the way the client's going to expect it to.
So that's kind of interesting, because I was thinking one way to deal with architectural designs that are difficult from a function point of view is just to say, we'll change the details. But what you're saying is, and this is a great principle, way easier to get this straightened out at the design phase than it is to try to spec it into, you know, performance or construct it into performance.
Yeah, I've seen architectural designs that have attempted to come to us as complete designs before we had any input in the design. And they have created details that are insurmountable.
Yeah.
You cannot waterproof around those details.
Yeah.
They're just goofy.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yeah. So I like that. Well, from gymnastics to goofy. That's cool.
That's like the biggest challenge that we face as well, is like, there are three viewpoints of the building is the way I see it. Like, it has to be most times aesthetically pleasing for the architect. Like, sure. The architect has to feel that it serves the purpose for the clients and that it's aesthetically pleasing. The clients have to be able to inhabit it and pay for it and be able to, you know, cover the cost, the operational cost of the building after we're done. And we as builders have to physically be able to put it together and then feel comfortable giving a warranty. And so when that process is just, here's a set of plans, tell us what it's going to cost, that you're skipping the involvement of potentially both the other parties involved, which is what I see sometimes when an architect's like, I drew this, and it's like, OK, did you talk to the client about what it was going to cost? Because this is way beyond the budget they gave me. Yeah. Or did you talk to a builder about how this is going to get put together?
You know, the architects that you want to work for, they get that. Mm-hmm. They fully understand the entire package. We have two or three architects that design very, very complex, difficult projects, but they don't even get through a napkin sketch without telling the client, you've got to engage these guys right now.
Yeah.
Because there are too many things that we need their input on, not just from a schedule and a budget, but from all the details of fitting it all together. Is it constructible? Because they know that left alone, they will design something that's not constructible. Mm-hmm. And that's just because, and it's not a pride thing. They realize they just don't have the experience to know how things fit together the way they do on paper versus in the field.
So. How often, you know, there's a lot of people moving to Austin, right, as a place to live. How often do you get folks coming from really significant different design expectations or climate, and you have to walk them through, well, this is how it's going to work here in Austin. Do you get much of that? Or they bring their architect with them from a location far
afield? We have a few of those. We've got one right now that was a Miami, Florida, Southern Florida architect who brought some Southern Florida, which isn't, the climate's not a lot different than Austin, a little bit. You know, they don't get some of the colder temperatures we get, but the details are certainly different. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a different area, different expectations of what it looks like and how it's supposed to be flashed and waterproof. But we got through that. That's not a problem.
You get a different set of techniques, even like
a little bit.
You get block foundation in Miami, probably rather than a cast foundation here.
Right.
Like there's a lot of that little stuff that even just inside one market is better to have a builder involved. Like, well, my concrete guy's not going to do it like that. He will refuse. So we're going to have to change the plans from the beginning.
Right.
You know,
things and there like was that. A lot of that. The plans morphed substantially once the architect realized the differences in our markets. But we don't get a lot of that, just a little bit. Most of our clients that we get are curators of fine architecture, and they bring with them or select an architect, and the architect refers them to us or some combination of that. And so the team that's assembled in the beginning is a good, sound team, and everybody's expectations are usually set properly. Yeah.
How much does your company do renovation versus new construction?
About half and half.
But
the renovations that we do generally are whole house renovations.
Yeah.
We don't really, as a policy, want to remodel a home unless we can improve its entire performance.
Yeah, that's...
So you got to reskin it. You got to re-insulate. You got to put on all new air conditioning systems. And so what you're left with is a foundation and a shell.
So that
that's
means
a wait. That's a very Austin thing to say. He said air conditioning system, not heating and cooling system.
Yeah, it's not just heating and cooling. Conditioning of the space is a whole envelope of products and systems. Yeah.
So does that mean you don't do, say, additions, where because then you're only controlling what happens in part of the building?
Well, I'm not going to say we don't. We generally don't. We'll do a lot of things for a previous client. Mm-hmm. Or if there's a home that we built 10 years ago mm-hmm. and a new client owns and they knew that we were original builder and they want to hire us to do an addition, sure, we'll do that. But the idea is to walk away from the project when it's finished and be able to assure the client that it will perform to new home standards.
That is a good way to put it. I like sitting across the table from Tim every time.
He's next to you, by the way.
I know.
I know you have trouble with geometry and spatial
metaphorically
relations.
Metaphorically across the table.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
For those of you listening, Peter is correct. He is sitting next to me instead of across the table. He's not just picking at me. So what in this market is like your, what's your like, I guess what I'm trying to say is what's the one thing that you're like, yeah, they probably don't do that other places, but it's super important to us.
Well, you know, not having really built in any other part of the country, I'm limited in my understanding of what the differences are. Steve, talking about Steve Basic.
Yeah.
And I sit across the table and we talk about the differences in Northeastern architecture and performance versus our climate zone. It's very different. And, trying to overlay some of ours to his or his to ours is very difficult and creates some challenges. I think you really have to approach it from a climate discrete perspective.
Mm-hmm. This is a safe space, by the way. Steve will not listen to this. We can talk as bad about him as you want.
Listen, Steve's one of my best buddies. I'll never talk bad about him unless it's to his face.
You know, what's really funny about that is that we were talking about his daughter, Lexi, and how she's with the business now.
Yeah.
And I've tried a whole bunch of times. Hey, Lexi, come on. Tell me what it's really like working for your dad. And Steve started laughing. He goes, She is loyal to the dying breath. Yeah. Yeah. You'll never get her to do that. So you're like his family then.
Well, I'd like to think so. Yeah. He and I share a lot of common understanding of what our roles are and what good building looks like. You know, I think you touched on something before we began talking that I want to address, and that is how so many builders strive to find that black and white answer to what performance really means. And I've come to the conclusion after many, many years that there is none. I think I said in a recent article I wrote for a client that for every aspect of building science, there's as many different solutions as there are builders. Everybody looks at it a little bit differently. Everybody has their understanding of, you know, what situation, what specific condition requires specific solutions. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think, I'd hope that there are no specific one solution to any given problem, that there's hopefully multiple ways to do it. It's the care and the thoughtfulness that we apply whatever we do.
Yeah.
You know, the best products that you can use, if they're installed improperly and slapped up, won't perform any better than no products at all. And I think that's our philosophy.
Yeah. Steve always adheres to the idea of, like, it's not which one's the best product. It's, is it installed properly? Because those, and I say sometimes in my presentations, like, those products exist in the market because they do work. They'd go away real quick if they didn't work. It's, you know, knowing which product to use when and whether or not you can install it properly. Man. That is the lens that we have to look at things when we're managing carpenters or working with carpenters.
Right. I would say about 50% of the questions we get, it's, wow, I really appreciate the building science you guys explain, but could you just tell me if this one particular situation works? And I think part of it is that when I was working early on and learning building science, my target was, I want the right prescriptive path or way to do things for each climate. And that's because I was afraid of applying principles on my own to a performance standard, right? That's way scarier to say, you know what, we're not going to get locked into that particular prescription or that material. We're going to see how the principles apply and we'll get the performance out. That to me is much scarier than, please tell me what to do, because I'd like to know the building science as well as you guys, but holy smokes, I don't have that kind of time. Just tell me the right way to do it.
Right. If somebody asked me, how should I do this? I'm going to give them sort of the default. This is tried and true. We know this has worked in multiple situations. It's not the latest and greatest. You know, there are applications that I'm still recommending 30-pound felt as a secondary WRB. I think it's a great product. It's been around forever. Nobody's ever found a real problem with it.
Right? You can pick it up at the local yard any day of the week. Stop anywhere on your way to the job and get it, please. Right.
And if you know what it can and can't do, then that's a great application.
Right.
But we get that question like, okay, well, you told me exactly how to do it, but what if I do this one little tweak? Is it okay? Now you're moving into that. You have to understand the building science and apply it on a performance basis, because I'm not going to sit and have you ask me each particular element, what happens if I change that?
Yeah. Every product that you might think of as an option has nuances that could lead you down a bad path. I don't want to get into those specifics because it's a rabbit hole, but you just have to be careful that everything you use is compatible and works in every situation that it might be subjected to. Mm-hmm. And that's hard.
Yeah.
With the complex matrix of things that we have as options to us today, they can interfere with each other if not applied properly.
This is a blind question, but I don't know the answer. When you turn the home over to your homeowner, do you do a build homeowner's manual? You know, do you give them some way to make sure that the the performance that you built in gets honored by the way they work the home?
Well, it's a little more complicated, but effectively, we tell clients that we are their customer service entity in perpetuity.
Yeah.
As long as they don't mind seeing us, we will continue to show up and help them make sure that their home performs to its maximum potential.
I just did a thumbs up for those of you who are not watching the video, but yeah. That's a great answer because there's a guy in Martha's Vineyard, John Abrams, South Mountain Company, and he calls them customers for life. Like if we work for you, you know, we're always there.
Hey, customers are our biggest asset.
Exactly.
Why give away an asset that once you've created this asset, why not keep it, foster it? Because the home itself and you're monitoring its performance history over time is a great learning tool.
So I just got to give you this real quick anecdote. There's a guy named Dave Menchen who was a climber in the area where I was living in Northeast, and he went to work for LL Bean. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, it's a crazy company. I work in research and development. If you send back a pair of LL Bean boots that are totally broken down, we'll give you a brand new pair of boots, because what could be better than getting our product back to know how it performed over time? And he said, but we'll go you one better. If you thought you bought your boots from LL Bean and they weren't ours and you send them to us, we'll still send you a new pair of LL Bean boots. Why? The only thing better than knowing how your product worked over time is how your competitor's product worked over time. So it's like it's a mind shift. Like, I'm not afraid to learn what happened with what I did. I'm going to use it to my benefit.
That's exactly right. And that's why we do remodeling work, is to learn how homes have performed since they were built.
Yeah.
Because when you disassemble them, you unbuild them, then you know,
that's good.
Right? You know what the previous builder contractor did right and what he did wrong. What products? I just recently put a new roof on a house that was there for 30 years, and peeled off the 30-pound felt that was used for the underlayment. The decking looked brand new.
Yeah,
you know, so another proof that product works in the right condition. But you're right. It's most valuable for us to not just keep the client as a long-term asset, but the home itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if a home that we built, as I said, or remodeled is owned by subsequent owners, we still want to stay engaged if we can, to whatever extent we can.
So our turnover process, and for that matter, our sales pitch, our initial sales pitch, we talk about, we give you a warranty, but we also warranty stupid. Like if we did something wrong, we want an opportunity to fix it. You paid for us to do it the right way. If we screwed something up, we're going to fix it. And I've kind of always just said it like that. And our team knows it like that. But when you're talking about, we want customers for life, we want to maintain that customer relationship in perpetuity, I had never really considered the idea of like talking to my project managers from that perspective and explaining it. Because then this idea of like, well, we just need to get this job done. We need to get finished up. You're not stopping that relationship when you get it finished up. I have to think that that would cause your project managers to look at things slightly different if they're like, this is just finishing the job is a step in the process. We're not actually ending a relationship with those people. And even though I look at it as we're not ending a relationship, I can totally see how my team would be like, once we get done with this, I'll move on to the next job, instead of being like, okay, well, it's just one step in the process of working with these folks. I really like the way that you guys look at that. I had never really considered it like
that. Yeah, I mean, that's true of pre-construction as well. We look at projects as three phases: the pre-construction, the construction, and the customer service phase. And so that's just all part of the same project. Mm-hmm. And although we do have different personnel, different people who manage different phases, that pre-construction, construction, and it's all part of the same team. We're a fairly small company, but communicate internally very frequently, mm-hmm. very thoroughly. Everybody knows what everybody else is doing. Nobody builds in a silo. And therefore, a given project, when it is substantially complete or when the client takes possession of it, it's just moving to that next phase. And the project manager has to stay engaged to make sure that the system is commissioned, that all the systems are commissioned right, the house is punched out right. And that takes a long time because there's a lot of things we don't know until the client is living there 24 hours a day.
Don't tap the table.
Oh, sorry.
People will get mad at us if I don't tell you to stop. Yeah.
Talk with my hands. Doesn't help here. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's the thing. We need the client's input as far as how the house is performing and what the deficiencies might be early on. All part of the learning process, all part of customer service and making them happy.
The idea of nobody builds in a silo. We're in the process of instituting what we're calling study abroad. You get to spend a day working on somebody else's project, on another project manager's project, especially at like core times where it's like, well, they're running through pre-drywall checklists this week, mm-hmm. Right ahead of the insulators. Like you should go and work with them for a day. And it works. It's going to be more important for us, too, because we have two offices. We have an office in Columbia, Missouri, and an office in Kansas City. They're 2 hours apart. They rarely see each other, but they're both doing really interesting things, both offices, and they're doing them ever so slightly different. And like, we got to figure out what the best way to do it is. And I think that nobody builds in a silo is a great way of looking at it. I'm excited to see where our, study abroad program winds up. I think they could all learn from each other. I learn from them, so they ought to be able to.
Very cool.
What else, Peter?
Well,
I drew a blank.
I'm fully satisfied. So I think
satiated.
Yeah, no, we could circle back to the job site trailer that we mentioned in there and how that fits into high performance.
We may as well. We've talked about it before, but there is. You guys have trailer parking on the side of the building. I'm proud that I come and go through the employee entrance when I'm here instead of the front.
We're working on a yard, so that stuff will be off in its own.
So it won't be chained to a tree outside? Right, right. Okay.
Yeah.
We're very lucky that we have just enough space to pull trailers inside, but our rental costs are probably substantially less than your guys.
Yeah, we could use triple the warehouse space we have.
Just to irritate our listeners that are in larger municipalities, we pay $500 a month for 3,000 square feet.
It makes me want to vomit.
But you guys have a trailer with a package unit on it outside.
We have three of those, actually. Actually, we have four on the job sites. We're renting one from one of our air conditioning contractors, but we strongly believe in two things. One, the house needs to be climatized as early in construction as you can, so all the products naturally sort of grow together, shrink together, fit together.
Find their equilibrium.
That's right. Great way to put it. And we get a lot more productivity from, we had a whole summer of 105 to 110 degree temperatures here. Nobody wants to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless they can work in a semi air conditioned environment inside. And this guy show up. They love working in our houses. And
I hadn't thought about that
all day long.
It's better for the building, but it's way better for the for the workers as well.
And the heat pump package unit, they work great in the wintertime, too. Yeah. You don't need it to be 75, 80 degrees inside. You need it to be 55 to 60 degrees inside in the wintertime. So, and a heat pump does that great.
And it's funny. I thought it was a dehumidification unit, and it's not. It's just a heat pump.
Yeah. It does remove a lot of the puddles under those trailers.
Well, there's a big old condensate line, but there's also there's an April. I was surprised to see an April air filtration system on it as well. So it's fully conditioning.
Well, it's sucking a bunch of. Well,
exactly. I hadn't thought about that.
We use a little pre-filter on the inside just to keep the large media filter in the unit from being able to be changed every week. But that's expensive. Those units cost about $750 a month to service and keep on the site. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a cost of the construction.
That's a rental cost to the client.
Right.
So the unit pays for itself.
Because we explain to them that the house will get done quicker and better and it'll look better, perform better once they move in because it's been conditioned all that time. And they get that.
Yep. Yeah.
The one out there is a Goodman. Are they all Goodman heat pumps?
I think because
they've got a reputation for being not only high performance, but pretty resilient.
Yeah, I think that they all three are. We started with, I think we started with Carrier on the first one that we did, and then they switched to the Goodman. But yeah, they work fine. And one of the ones we have has been around 10 years.
Wow.
When we're through with it, we open it up, lightly power wash the coils off, put it all back together, retape it, re-insulate it, ready for the next job.
So we have two. Just in summation, it's a cost to the client. It's not normal equipment, so you're able to rent it to the client, so that should pay for itself. I think you said how much they cost, but we just bought a couple, and it's like we spent $1,000 on a trailer and $6,000 on the unit,
exactly,
and
right,
$500 on temporary ductwork and stuff like that. Our security solution is we're just going to park them on the job sites and take the wheels off of them. Like, you can't steal a trailer that has funky 10-inch tires if you don't have them already.
Right.
But that sales pitch of like, you've met Jackson Andrews, I think. I'm not, Jackson's a builder in Virginia Beach.
Right.
One of the things that he's agrees with Tim on, he's like, we have subcontractors call when it's really hot. Hey, is that, is that thing over there ready for us to come by? And like, it's a net positive across the board. We were recently looking for one, and I called a builder in my market that I know does it. And I said, hey, Alex, is yours being used right now? And he's like, yeah. He's like, it never sits. And I was like, damn. I wanted to just see if I could rent it from him for a little while we're waiting on one of ours to get up and going. So I think it's just one more little aspect of like, we understand how buildings operate. Mm-hmm. We understand how the people that work with us want to operate. And we're just trying to do the best job we can. And it's not costing us anything. It's a money making proposal. Right. Like, it's such a weird thing to think like, this is better in every aspect. So
just a nerdy thing. It's this unit out there is 12 SEER, and I'll bet you the sensible heat ratio is pretty low, which means it's pulling a lot of the latent load out.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
That's the cool part about poor performing equipment. Right. It runs longer, it gets colder,
and it
condenses more.
It condenses more moisture out. Yeah. That's cool. Right. Well, thanks, Tim.
Sure.
This was a real pleasure.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for watching the Unbuild It podcast today. I'm with Peter. Thank you, Tim. If you haven't heard Tim on any of the Build podcasts, go and check that out, because Tim is a wealth of knowledge. I can see why he sits in that office while Matt's out gallivanting around the country, not building.
Another good G word. We had gymnastics, goofy, and gallivanting.
Okay.
Nice.
The letter of the day. This is G. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for joining us every time we publish. You can find us through any of your normal listening platforms for podcasts, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, all of those. You also can find us on YouTube. You should like and subscribe. You should leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And now, if you couldn't figure it out on your own, we're available on the Build Show Network, hence why we're recording in Austin, Texas. And we're able to say, hey, Tim, the first thing you're going to do today is hang out with us on a podcast. So make sure you check us out on the Build Show Network as well. You can get the video through that platform, and we're happy to be there. We're happy they have us. Until next time, thanks for watching. Have a good day.
So long.